You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
America, fuck yeah.
Whoa. That's already been an episode.
Yes, this week, before we get into the theme of the episode, this technically was supposed to come out, you know, last week, closer to the 4th of July, so it's very Go America themed once we start discussing it. But, we're a little late, so that's why we're talking about 4th of July shit, you know, on, like, the 18th of July.
Dude, it's the 15th.
Well, by the time this is released, it'll be like the 16th or 17th, whatever. I'm bad at math. But anyway,
and
what
words.
Are we smoking this week?
So we are smoking the Camacho. Coyolar
is what I'm going to say it's how it's pronounced.
Yeah, so this is a cigar that, you know, has been around previously. I believe last year it was called the Diploma.
This cigar was discontinued originally in 2013.
That's what I was getting at, is originally it was discontinued, but then, you know, so this is kind of a rebirth cigar.
A few years ago when Camacho was kind of bought out and they went through a whole rebranding, this was a blend that was discontinued because it's 100% Honduran tobacco, but it all comes from like the same small, like, 15-acre farm at the base of a mountain.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this is kind of the powerhouse of Camacho cigars as it's being branded. What I was hinting at before was the Diploma cigar that came out sported very similar flavor profiles as this one. And no doubt a full-flavored cigar. Pepper, cedar, oaky, I don't know, man. Something about, you know, we've smoked a lot of Nicaraguan cigars, and I'm a big fan of Nicaraguan cigars. And this here kind of borders, you know, Honduras and Nicaragua,
It's kind of in that kind of middle, mid-region there. Yes. Between the two. Little bit of a blend, if you will. Last couple of review cigars kind of been in the more medium to medium full range, not real kicks in the teeth. This one's definitely kind of back to that us smoking shit that, like, you know, kind of hurts a little.
But I mean, you know, then again, we've talked about so many times with Camacho cigars that, you know, their powerhouse is not necessarily, you know, every other brand's powerhouse. You know, I mean, I've smoked some medium fools that, as of right now, I mean, we are smoking the Titan, so this is a big bastard.
Yeah.
This is going to be a 660 solid all the way through, but
yeah, with stuff like the Triple Black and the Triple Maduro and the freaking, you know, what was the other one we had? The Czech Six. You know, some of these, like...
And the Shellback, even, I think.
Or in the, what is it, the Power Band. Yeah, their medium plus is more like everyone else is, like, freaking full. This thing's got some heat to it so far, which, yeah. I like. Yeah, you know, like I said, I've kind of gone light the last couple weeks. It's nice to have a good kick in the lungs again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been so, you know, long since I've been able to join you and, sit down and smoke a cigar. I've almost forgotten what I'm doing here. I mean,
you've been in the wilds of Alabama.
I almost, don't feel like I can call myself a cigar nerd anymore. Like
which end do I cut?
Man, this feels really hot on my tongue. I think you need to flip it over. Burn in's supposed to protrude out, not go in. Ah, got it.
It's going to be a while since you've had something strong. You're going to, like, puking halfway through the episode.
Maybe. Who knows? So good thing I got, a trash can within, you know. So if you just hear a mad dash and stuff crashing, it's...
So would you like to tell the story of why we're late getting this episode up?
I mean, because I'm human and I'm not perfect. And, you know, the last time we recorded at the home base, I decided I was going to leave the mic cables still attached to said microphone instead of the microphone that I packed in my travel bag. So that left me without a XLR cable.
Yeah,
and,
since he was in the wilds of Alabama, apparently you cannot find a freaking XLR cable anywhere.
I mean, you probably can, but, you know, when you're working 12-plus hour days and your day starts at 5:30 and ends at 6:30, it doesn't really leave a lot of time to go and explore all the places that shut down at 7.
I was just going to say, Alabama doesn't have any, like, music shop. At least not in that part of Alabama.
No. I mean, it's not the... I don't know, man. I don't know where the artists go. I mean, I'm sure there's places, but, you know, it's probably you got to travel 40 or 50 miles to get to them.
Yeah, there's country music. Everyone's playing with, freaking acoustic
spoons
shit.
And stuff.
Yeah, there's like, they don't need mic cables. It's all acoustic country out there.
Actually, I think where I'm at, it's very much hip-hop.
Ah, okay.
Once again, probably not doing too much with, technical stuff, just sitting behind a computer programming your step sequencer or using your MIDI controller. You're not doing too much vocal-wise, I don't think.
It's all wireless mics when you're rapping, yeah. They ain't got time for that cable to get in the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that explains. So it's all my fault, the reason that we're delayed. That's what Joe was looking for here. So I'll give him the satisfaction of saying, I screwed up. But here I am.
Microphones don't work without cable. I mean, this is just like a dry run for like we definitely won't forget anything for Dragon Con.
But it doesn't matter if we do because we're in a city that there's a music store or like the Walmarts are not created equal. Like there's a music section in some of the Walmarts around here. So, yeah, you know, in a pinch... You know, you just make do with what you can make do. I don't know, man. I went to the, I could have got one of the Barbie, you know, with a quarter inch input, and I guess we could have recorded on that. But you know what? I value the audio quality too much to.
This is the bad part because you can't even really record off of the onboard mics on the Zoom because you have to plug in the computer to that mic input to record me on Skype. So it's like, it could have been a one-sided conversation.
So I'm gonna call, most of our podcasts yeah, are.
Like, I'm going to call in. Just leave it on. I'll like text you when I'm done.
So, you know, as you're having to travel and search for mic cables and, you know, do endless amounts of just running around, I think this is where you're supposed to plug a promo for.
Call in the Strike Force, StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use your promo code CigarNerds for 20% off your order. And, you know, that stuff will keep you going, you know, in the wilds or wherever you're at. You know, if you're in the jungles of Vietnam with the Green Berets, I mean, they will ship anywhere. If you're in a hut somewhere in a jungle, like, they will parachute in with some Strike Force. And it comes in tiny little tin pouches that you can take anywhere. You don't need cans. All you need is, like, you know, water, vodka, whatever you want to put it in. I mean, if you're a man, just drink it straight. But anyway...
Yeah. So back to
this
the,
is kind of a good preview for our the new segment we talked about where it's like the our rant segment. It's kind of a preview of what that's
so
going to turn
rant
into.
That you know, damn, my producer doesn't have his shit in order, and
no, I'm going to say this is like a nice like you know like preview of what we may do with that that random ass segment that we were gonna plug.
Speaking
in.
Of which, the Cigar Nerds are a member of the ESO Network, and. You know, for, you know, folks that are looking for something different, not only is there a plethora of shows, you know, ranging from just about every topic imaginable, but there is also a Patreon, you know, out there for the ESO Network.
With exclusive podcasts and segments.
You know, so if you're, you know, looking for something, you know, special guest interviews or, you know, some, you know, really premium podcast content, you know, definitely check out the ESO Patreon.
And eventually we'll sit down and record something for them
Patreon. Oh, we've got something for the listeners coming up in Nerd News that I want to touch on that is breaking for the Cigar Nerds. This will be a Cigar Nerd first. So,
I don't even know what this is.
Definitely stay tuned.
So this week, since, you know, we just had the 4th of July where everything's, you know, go America. We started talking about, like, there's a list.
Whoa. You're not go America every day? Get the fuck out.
I am. I wake up in America every day. But, like I said, you know, we kind of started talking, like, there should be a list of essential American movies. Like, if you're a, you know, that's how you catch ISIS. Like, have you seen these movies? Nope, you're probably ISIS. So, we're going to start our first, like, three nominations for the Cigar Nerds America's Must movie list.
And by three, we'll probably segue and touch on about 30.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be some honorable mentions, but yeah. Three official entries into that list this year. And with that, time for the show.
Fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men we'll test today. But only three win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land. Trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day. Courage taken from the Green Beret.
And welcome back.
Wait, we went somewhere?
Yeah, I went to the bathroom.
Okay.
Got another cigar. It's time to America. So put on your red, white, and blue Speedos and let's, like, you know, chug a Budweiser and play Star Spangled Banner or some shit like that.
Speaking of which, have you tried the, you know, the new Budweiser that's brewed by vets, for vets? You know, I almost feel like it's a marketing ploy, but I'm kind of curious to see if it carries a different flavor or anything. I don't know.
No, I was like, I'm torn because I'm like, it's Budweiser, but then it's like, oh no, this is like special, like America blend. Did try the Black Rifle Coffee Freedom Roast. That was pretty good. That was the new coffee flavor I've been trying. But no, I've not tried any beer lately because I've been on this, like, you know, I used to have fun, but then I went on a diet, so I haven't been drinking any
beer. I guess this is a good time to tell folks, you know, I mean, beer is very much, you know, a part of, you know, celebrating America's independence. But yeah, we've kind of got away a little bit, you know, from the Beer 30 stuff, you know, not only for the reasons you mentioned, but then too, you know, just from my perspective that I've also kind of been trying to do the same and, you know, shed some pounds. And I don't know, it's kind of motivating, you know, when you step on the scale and you see the digits dropping and, you know,
yeah,
it's
I've been, you know, doctor put me on a low sugar, low carb diet. And so I've been working out hard and not eating, been eating a lot of meat, but no carbs. So I'm like, I've had to switch to whiskey instead of beer. Maybe we'll have to change to like a whiskey 30. But what we've planned to do, and we're not going to cut it out completely because, like I said, in moderation, I'm just, you know.
There is a new version of Woot Stout coming out. So,
yeah,
I mean,
we'll go back to it now and again. But we thought this was, like, especially when, you know, we're recording some of these shows like on the road, so it's hard to sit down and have a beer together when we're not together. Then we just get one of us talking about a beer.
We're together in spirit, man.
So
that's,
like,
America.
Yeah, so we're still gonna beer 30 it occasionally, but I thought it would be a good opportunity to introduce a new segment, and we have our, you know, promo that we've only used for interviews in the past, our Blow and Smoke. Well, we're gonna turn that into like a semi-regular segment where it's like, hey, we got something we want to rant about this week. We're gonna do a Blowing Smoke, or we saw something or read something, or there's some kind of event we want to talk about that maybe not big enough for us to do an entire hour-long discussion, but a nice, you know, 15-20-minute chat. You know, that's what we're going to start doing with our Blow and Smoke. So we're just going to come like a random mini podcast each week mixed in with your regular podcast. So stay tuned for that.
Changes are afoot.
So before we get into our three Americans must-see movie list, you know, there's a few that were not, like, we didn't mention because they've been mentioned in previous podcasts, or we're saving for, like, its own podcast at some point. So, you know, one that is definitely on this list that we didn't get, we're not getting into, is Independence Day. Because we did a whole episode on Independence Day.
It's titled Independence Day. Yes. On Independence, Independence Day.
So yes, Independence Day definitely included on that list. I mean, for nothing more than the, you know, America, the president's speech from Independence Day. I still see that getting played like every 4th of July on Facebook. Like, that is like one of the most epic speeches in movie history. And also Team America. I vaguely believe that we talked about that at some point. So that one too should be on the list, if nothing else, for the theme song, America, fuck yeah. But yeah, that too, you know, not really going to go into deeply on because, like I said, we already talked about it. But yeah, those two, also on the list.
But are they? Are they officially on the list?
We should actually, like, type up this list and put it, like, on a special page on our website so people can go to it and be like, here's the list, and just, you know, add to it, you know, every year. So the first movie we're officially going to talk about is, you know, a classic. You know, I always want to do a John Wayne episode.
And in fact, like, it's kind of funny because this almost started out as a John Wayne episode. And then, because it doesn't get much more America than John Wayne.
Yeah, and like, I still plan on doing a full John Wayne episode one day when I have more time to see more movies, but it's a busy week. But this movie in particular made the list because not only is it the 50th anniversary, but I believe it also came out on the 4th of July, and that is The Green Berets.
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, this, you know, I mean, so much of these films, I mean, about the only thing that, you know, this film didn't have that I felt like it needed was, you know, almost like a Arlie Ermey style presence. Like, yes. You know, I mean, like, you know, seeing them, you know, go through, you know, the training and everything. But I mean, this film, you know, hits home on so many different ways, you know.
And you look at it, like, released in 1968, starring John Wayne, Jim Hutton, David Janssen, Aldo Ray, Patrick Wayne, and Jack Sue. But also, you know, it had freaking Mr. Sulu, George Takei, like before he was famous in Star Trek as a Vietnamese colonel or captain. But yeah, I mean, not only is this a Vietnam movie, I mean, they were still in Vietnam at the time this came out, and it's kind of weird too because if you're a fan of John Wayne, you know him primarily as like a Western guy. I mean, he, like, pretty much, like, you don't realize all his shit. You kind of forget that all this stuff came out in the 60s and 70s because pretty much he's a cowboy in every movie. But then he also did like a few World War II movies. But like I said, this was like the most modern John Wayne movie. You know, it was kind of like, you know, set in present day at the time, which was kind of cool and different for a John Wayne movie.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I mean, this film is, you know, I really like the angle, you know. I mean, especially thinking, you know, back to, you know, the Woodstocks and, you know, the music era. And then, you know, just the political climate of, you know, the U.S. during the Vietnam War. Because you had people that were, you know, utterly opposed. You had other people that were absolutely for. And I think this film, you know, did a very good job of, you know, capturing that political, you know, unrest, you know, putting in, you know, somebody from the press that's, you know, there that just wants to, you know, be like, yeah, I don't believe in your war. And, you know, you can show me, you know, the weapons being supplied to foreign governments, you know, for this war. But
yeah, speaking of like a Arlie Ermey presence, the closest we get to this in the movie is the character of Master Sergeant, or, you know, Muldoon, who's like the unit's sergeant. And, you know, it starts off them giving like a, like a kind of like a press day demo of and talking about what's going on in Vietnam, and you got a guy that's like, you know, why are we in here? You know, this is all bullshit. And he's like, shit, this is just basically a Vietnamese civil war. Why are we interfering in you know Vietnam civil war? And he's like, all right, yeah, I got you. He's like, check out this rifle. Yeah, yeah, supplied by Chinese communists. This rifle here, you know, Russian communists. This one, Czech communists. No, this is not just a Vietnamese, you know, conflict. Yeah, like I said, he's like, have you ever been to, you know, Southeast Asia? Well, no. He's like, all right, then. Moving right along. And I think we got a lot of that today, people who want to talk about things in politics that don't know shit about what is actually going on. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't do a lot of research today on things
well,
and topics.
I mean, not even research, but I mean, you can do all the research in the world, but in still, you know, you step foot in some of these third world countries, and, you know, it really puts in perspective that even America at its worst is a million times better than a lot of these other countries have it currently. So, you know, that was one of the, you know, things that, you know, I kept having, you know, I mean, when we had, you know, the Iraq War, the wars in Afghanistan, and, you know, some of the Middle East, you know, wars and everything, like, this film just hits really, really close to home. And it's crazy to think back, you know, in the 60s and, you know, how history kind of repeats itself.
Yeah, because we're seeing, you know, a lot of that day, too. And even John Wayne said about the making of this movie, he was like, you know, he saw a lot of people just bad-mouthing the military and stuff, that, you know, and these soldiers that were coming home that really had, you know, no choice in the, you know, because this was at a time when, you know, the draft was heavily, and he was like, I'm tired of people, you know, it's one thing to disagree politically with whether or not we should have been in a war, but it's a whole other thing to shit on the troops. You know, you can not support the war, but you should still like support, like, you know, the men and women that are defending your country. So he wanted to make this movie to, like, you know, kind of humanize the and let people see what soldiers are actually going through. That's why he got like a huge amount of cooperation from the U.S. government. So I mean, they got, you know, access to, like, you know, actual military hardware and locations, and, you know, a lot of, you know, real world assistance with the making of this movie, which was, you know, really cool.
But does that make it propagandist, you know, to
hey, I'm all for propaganda as long as it's entertaining.
Truer words were never spoken. Trying to play devil's advocate, that did not work. Joe's like, yeah, I'm okay with being lied to and everything, as long as it's for the betterment of. But like, I mean, yeah. No, you are absolutely right. You know, I mean, at no point is war on either side a good thing. But I mean, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, without people willing to take up arms and everything, we wouldn't have a country. You know,
this too kind of.
I mean, we wouldn't be infiltrating, you know, the king and queen overseas, you know, without an American. So, you know, I mean, we've got, you know, the prince to marry an American woman. So, I mean, you know, one step closer.
Oh, and I love that meme, too. It's like, it's the emperor, and it's like, you have infiltrated the royalty princess. Now, whatever, issue order 1766. but yeah, I'm like, and it's been a while since I watched this movie, but going back and watching it kind of reminded me of We Were Soldiers, the Mel Gibson movie. I mean, that, you know, also set in Vietnam, especially like some of the stuff where like I said, the because that movie too did have a reporter that wanted to see what was actually going on and kind of tagged along with these troops, and then the shit got so bad at one point that the anti-war reporter had to pick up a gun and like defend himself, you know, right along with the troops. And cause like, so they, you know, John Wayne is set in this movie as, you know, Colonel Mike Kirby is set to take over, like, you know, a region of Vietnam, you know, as a base commander. And he's like, you know, I really don't like, as soon as I get there, they're going to saddle me with a desk. You know, let me, you know, give me a month, just kind of see the country and see what's actually going on. So when he gets there, they're like, hey, we're having trouble at this little fire base. And the in the jungle. Like he's like, well, I'm gonna take a escort a team up there to kind of replace some people, and you know, let's see what's actually going on out here. And you know, this reporter that goes with him, you know, once he gets there, he sees them, you know, kind of doing humanitarian stuff, you know, helping out the local populace and you know, offering medical aid and all this other stuff. But then, like, they get overrun by you know, the Viet Cong and the Vietnamese stuff. And, like, I mean, the base is, like, they end up having to evacuate at one point. But, it, like, it gets so bad that he's like, fuck it, give me a rifle.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to help out here. I'm going to, yeah, and kind of like that's what happened in, and We Were Soldiers at one point. I like the reporter's like on the ground, and like the friggin' master sergeant and We Were Soldiers kicks him in the ribs and throws him a gun. And he's like, what? I'm a non-combatant. He's like, there's no such thing today here. You want to live, you fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's just intense, you know? I mean, it's intense, you know, just watching and knowing, you know, history. But, I mean, it's got to be a whole nother level, you know, making history and being there firsthand.
Yeah. Oh, and it's that scene, too, when they, after the base is overrun, and, you know, it's kind of John Wayne shows up with the reinforcements right as they're, like, leaving, and, like, the Air Force gunship is, like, the freaking Puff the Magic Dragon, a Douglas AC-47 Spooky armed with M61 Vulcan miniguns. And they're like, hey, we got air support here. Where do you want it? He's like, put it on the base. We're not there. And he's like, all right. They just freaking, like, mow the field. Miniguns from high altitude does some damage.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
That's like talking about making it rain.
Making it hell. Literally. Oh, yeah.
That was one of the scenes that I really liked was when they just like lay away. Yeah, you know, they're like, yeah, we got the bait. Oh shit.
I don't know. You know, I mean, it was really kind of crazy too. You know, I mean, the fact that you know medical supplies and everything are in short order, but here they are. You know, with this rustic camp. You know, just trying to help out. You know, as many of the farmers and stuff like that as they can. And you see the one guy. You know. Catches, you know, John Wayne's eye, you know, that looks around, he starts counting the paces and everything.
Yeah, because they're getting, like, daily mortar attacks, and they're being, like, pretty surgical with their strikes. They're like, how are they so good with their... And then one of the, like, local Vietnamese army soldiers turned out like a spy, and he's actually pacing out the the base, and they, you know, they kind of notice him and just walk up and just punch him in the face and turn him over to the local army to deal with him. But yeah, friggin' George Takei is like a badass in this movie.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because even like at one point they're and when they're getting overrun, like one of the machine gun nests turns on them, and turns out it's like Viet Cong guys dresses their soldiers, so ends up killing a couple of their soldiers, and there he's like, don't worry, I planned for this. And he had like already mined like the machine gun nest, and like pulls out this big detonator, and he's like, bloop, and just blows up the freaking, make sure the enemy don't get a hold of something. He's like freaking like, yeah, vicious.
Yeah, definitely. It I don't know, it's just intense.
Oh my.
And, you know, kind of, I don't know, man, like this movie, you know, really pulls on the heartstrings too. Like, you know, you see Peterson, you know, taken up with the, you know, young Vietnamese kid, and, you know, the kid's basically lost everything except for, you know, a dog that he has and stuff. And,
yeah. And, you know, and one of those big, you know, attacks, like the, yeah, Sergeant Peterson, you know, saves the kid, but kid's dog's dead, and he's like, you know, finds him like burying the dog in the middle of this battle, and he's like, you can kill like hundreds of people, I don't care, you kill the dog. I'm just like, oh, that's sad.
Well, I mean, but then you know, you see the kid, you know, all the mortars and everything raining down around him, and here he is, you know, building, you know, he digs a hole, he builds a mound and covers it with rocks and stuff, and it's like, shit. It's like, I mean, this is, you know, I think we've done a lot of the, you know, more fun and, you know, movies that, you know, kind of the world has to come together. And we'll talk about, you know, some of that later on with Armageddon. But, you know, this is probably one of the more serious, you know, that's just like, I mean, you're watching some of this and, you know, it's just...
Because a lot of stuff,
you're
like...
speechless, like...
Yeah, because a lot of stuff, you know, ends up being like... It's a war movie, but it's a, like a yay cool action film. I mean, this one does a good job of showing some of the horrors of war. Like, you know, when they go to the village and find the, you know, the village they had went to protect and bring back into the base for protection got, you know, slaughtered the night before, and they, you know, killed a bunch of the elders just because they were talking to the Americans. And like I said, all the... You know, the, like I said, the kid who that they've kind of taken up at the base because he's a, you know, his parents were killed, and, you know, and, you know, I guess the orphanage, you know, he was like a war orphan that they were kind of watching. But yeah, the character of Peterson too, I liked because he was just kind of a, kind of reminds me of Face Man from the A-Team. Because he's like the guy that can get anything. He's the scrounger, and they catch him like, stealing supplies from, you know, the Green Beret base before, you know, John Wayne ships out. And, you know, he's like in a whole Jeep loaded with shit he's stolen. And they're like, you know, he's like, so, yeah, how, you know, he's like, you're not a very good thief, are you? You got caught? He's like, yeah, you caught me 1 out of 100 times. And that's still pretty good odds. And he's like, all right, you know, and just walks off and leaves him with, like, the sergeants. And then... Sure enough, he comes back later marching and goes, I would like to volunteer, sir. And he's like, all right, sergeant. And he's like, did he just promote me to sergeant? He's like, yep, you're our new supply officer. And your first job is to go steal back all the stuff you stole. And he's like, yes, sir.
Yeah, definitely good to know people because he gets his hands on, you know, a lot of stuff. Like, that was kind of the cool thing, you know, too, like where they've got, you know, a bunch of the, you know, I guess, you know, they wanted to clear out, you know, some of the forest and stuff. And they're like, man, it's going to take us, you know, months to, you know, do this without some mechanical help. And he's like, I know somebody, you know.
Yeah, it gets a whole, like, unit of,
you know, they've got the equipment there. And it's like, you know, all just the bright yellow and the, you know, sergeants there. Like, all right, get this shit painted and get it ready to ship out. And, you know, you just see overhead, wait a second, we lost some tin and some other supplies. And, yeah, I'll make it up to you as it's flying out over the horizon.
Oh. Yeah, and the Patrick Wayne is the head of the CB's unit that comes there to help him, you know, build on the base, who's been in a – it's like this kind of movie you start looking, it's like a collection of John Wayne, like, regular actors. Because Patrick Wayne's been in a bunch of John Wayne's movies – I think it was in, might have been Chisholm. I know he's in McClintock. And then, did you notice who the company radio operator was? It was the idiot son from Smokey and the Bandit.
I thought so. Like
when I saw it, I'm like, oh shit, it's Junior. Oh, and another one of my favorite characters is a sergeant that Sergeant Provo, who. kind of comes in and volunteers. He's like, I heard, you know, I heard you're going to Vietnam. He's like, he's a heavy weapons specialist. He's like, I want to see war, sir. He's like, I want to volunteer. And, you know, one of John Wayne's officers, like, you know, he's got a good record. He's a good man and stuff. And kind of becomes like John Wayne's like driver and staff sergeant. And he's like, it was kind of one of the funny things. He's like, when they finally get to Vietnam, he's like, you know, there's a lot of roads and buildings and stuff named after dead heroes. He's like, yeah. So he's like, I can't think of anything I want named after me. He's like, man, you know, like all these names kind of rhyme or just kind of sing to me, you know, but he's like, my name's Provo. I can't think of anything cool that should be named after Provo. He's like, well, you think on that and like, let me know. And later on he dies and like, you know, gets wounded in a heroic fashion. And he's like, yeah, as he's dying, he's like, yeah, will you have a drink with me, sir? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, you know, that thing I told you about, like, about what I wanted named after me? He's like, yeah. He's like, I finally thought of the perfect thing. And he kind of whispers it in his ear, and he's like, you're right, that does sing. So, you know, in the military, I guess the base bathroom is called the Privy. So he got a bathroom named after him, Provo's Privy. it's something that everyone will always think about. I mean, he will always be remembered for people who have to go to the bathroom on that base.
I mean, not only that, but I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, you could easily change, you know, Privy to Provo. I could see that.
He was cool too, because like you said, he's like, He's like, so you're a heavy weapons specialist. He's like, and he's like, yeah, and if I can find smaller stuff, I'm a specialist in that too. He's like, I'll use whatever I can get my hands on, sir.
But yeah, I don't know. You know, like you said, you know, this film, you know, I mean, you saw a lot of the ground combat. I mean, then it was almost like a spy movie at one point, you know, where they...
Yeah, because you got like the whole, like, I guess, maybe training type stuff, or at least like, you know, gearing up to go to war. And then you have the whole, you know, story around the, you know, the base and with, you know, them and the reporter. And I do like after that whole big battle and stuff and he had to defend himself. He's like, you know, what do you think of the war now? And he's like, well, if I go back and write what I, you know, what I think now, I'll probably get fired. And I like too, you see the character back toward the end of the movie, like when he showed up, he's wearing like, you know, everyday street clothes. But, you know, after he's gone with them into this mission, you see him like he's in fatigues. If you didn't know he was a reporter, you'd think he's another soldier. So he's kind of, you know, now that he's here, he's, you know, he's like, I want to report about, you know, what's really going on, not just, you know, the bullshit stuff my paper tells me to write.
I think you need to find a different network to work for in order to do that.
But then, yeah, then the whole, like, you know, third chapter of the movie is them trying to go kidnap this, you know, North Vietnamese general or whatever, and, you know, luring him in with a hot double agent chick and snatching his ass out of bed in the middle of the night. Yeah, so I was like, yeah, I mean, this movie's almost got like three separate stories that they, you know, that they go through out there, which was, you know, it's kind of cool. It's like, you know, it's, you know, like almost like three different chapters. And it even ends with, like, you know, because Peterson, of course, on this last mission, you know, now that he's told the kid, like, you know, I'm going to take care of you now since you lost your dog, you don't have anybody else. Of course, he ends up getting killed right at the last. And, you know, that's another one of those, like, tear-jerking moments when, like, you know, the choppers come back from
the
battle.
Yeah, the kids are running, Peterson!
You're running
Peterson!
From each chopper. And then he finally, like, you know, the colonel gets him and he's like, what's going to happen to me now? He's like, you let me worry about that, little Green Beret. He's like, because this, you know, this war is what, you know, you're about what this war is about, you know. And you get that whole them like standing out.
But I mean, I thought it was crazy, you know, just the emotion leading up to that. Like you said, you know, like the kid sees a colonel coming over and he's like, no,
and yeah, he runs away. And one of the sergeants is like, you know, I don't envy your job, sir. This is like the one thing I definitely, you know, don't want to be in your shoes. So yeah, I mean, it, you know, cool action, funny moments, but then like really, like, you know, heart-wrenching scenes too. I mean, it's a no wonder this one kind of ranks up there in classic John Wayne films.
Oh yeah, no doubt. I don't know, the next film that I watched after this, you know, I mean you already talked about Mel Gibson, so I mean, you know, probably one of the most iconic, you know, Mel Gibson roles I can think about is, you
Lethal
know,
Weapon. Oh, no, we're talking about something else.
No, I was thinking more, you know, The Patriot, but...
Oh, and also, you know, the Green Beret was directed by John Wayne as well. The Patriot, 2000 film written by Robert Rodet and directed by Roland Emmerich, starring Mel Gibson, Chris Cooper, and the late Heath Ledger.
Who just happens to die in this film as well.
He's a habit of dying in films.
Yes. Except this time, it was for real. Well, no. I mean, it was for fake, but... But it was weird seeing young Heath Ledger. Like, it's crazy. Like, I mean, this is one of those films that I don't think about being nearly 20 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can still remember, you know, all of the marketing, the publicity, and, you know, I mean, you know, everything else surrounding this film. And it definitely, you know, does not scream, I'm 20 years old.
Yeah. I mean, this one, like, it's constantly coming on TV. I don't know how many times I've sat through this movie up at the cigar shop. It's like, one of those is like, oh, it's on, I got to sit and watch The Patriot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's almost, you know, we've joked about it. It's The Patriot, Pacific Rim, and...
The Martian. Those are the ones that always seem to be on TV. I've seen lots of pieces of those movies. Oh.
Dude, I don't know how long it took me to see The Martian from start to finish, because, like, I would catch, like, you know, one-third of it, you know, it might be the end, then I might catch the beginning, and then finally the middle. And like, it was one of those that I'm like, man, I really want to watch this movie, and I just never got around to, you know, watching it continuously. And then it happened, and I was like, damn, this is a really good movie. I see what all the hype is about.
Oh, yes. You know, this is, you know, and I mean, we don't have a lot of great, like, Revolutionary War movies. I mean, World War II, Vietnam, and, you know, now, like, you know, the modern day warfare seems to be popular topics for movies, but it's hard to think of a few, like, you know, great Revolutionary War movies that aren't, like, historical reenactments or documentaries.
No, but I mean, this is going to be a hard movie for somebody to top.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the fact that you watch it, and I got to say the same thing about Green Beret too. I mean, yeah, some of the action sequences, there wasn't the great CGI and stuff like that, but
the blood all looks like paint.
But I mean, you know, like the stories and the history surrounding the stories and everything. I mean, it's hard to, you know, top those topics.
Yeah, and this, you know, stars Mel Gibson as, you know, Benjamin Martin, who was a veteran of the French and Indian War, and has, you know, a widower with 7 children, you know, living in South Carolina. But he, you know, while he, you know, is all for the Continental Army and freedom, he's very reluctant to pick up arms again. He's like, I've got kids. I'm not the young man I was when, you know, I was a soldier before. But then, you know, like, you know, so many people then, you know, at that time in America, like, war eventually came to them. And, you know, the British, you know, fucked with the wrong dude. Because his oldest son, played by Heath Ledger, you know, runs off and joins the Continental Army against his dad's wishes. But, you know, ends up being wounded and coming back home. And, you know, the British follow them there and ends up shooting his little brother kind of as punishment and arrests him. And, you know, sets fire to the family farm for harboring wounded soldiers, and that's when it's like, you know, Mel Gibson's like, oh hell no, breaks out his hatchets and all his guns, and, you know, takes his other two oldest boys and, like, you know, loads them up, and he's like, here you go, like, y'all are snipers now, like, you know, you shoot, you know, you reload for your brother, and just, you know, don't shoot me. And he just runs in there with, like, the freaking, what, 3 or 4 pistols in his pants, and, like, when he runs out of ammo, just starts freaking chopping dudes up with, like, hatchets and shit. It's just, like, that's probably one of those badass action sequences in film, or especially, like, in a time when it's, like, not kung fu and full automatic weapons.
Yes.
I mean, just freaking muskets and hatchets. It's just, like, you know, the most brutal fight scene.
Yeah, like, I was watching this with Rachel, and, you know, she's like, you know, he's given a speech, and he's like, you know, I understand how long it takes to reload your rifle. That's why I'm asking every man to give 2 shots and not 3, you know, before they, you know, evade and stuff. And she's like, that doesn't seem like a lot. And I'm like, well, there was a reason why the Minutemen were called Minutemen, because it took a minute to reload if you were really good.
Yeah. Yeah, today you didn't when
have
it's like
magazines that. And, you know, belt feds and everything.
Yeah, I got my, you know, 19X with a fucking 20 round clip or magazine. Yeah, having to fire a musket
really
ball.
Just say clip.
Oh, yeah,
I'm gangsta, you.
Yeah, I'm sad now.
I bet it's a ghost gun too.
It's not a clip. It's a magazine. I'm so stupid. Bad Joe, I have failed this city. But yeah, this is like that whole, like, having to, like, you know, and anyone who's been under stressful, you know, the first thing to go is fine motor skills, and trying to load a musket under fire with, like, you know, pour the powder, put the ball, ram it home, freaking powder in the pan, pull back the hammer, and then fire, and then do it all again, like, while other guys are about to shoot back at you, is just stressful situation, you know, like, under the best conditions you might get off a round a minute, and the chaos of war. I mean, the people that could, like, do that reliably consistently, there's a word I can pronounce, is kind of amazing skill set.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, I've gone, you know, I don't know, for me, like, I've had somebody that's a much better shooter than I just standing over my shoulder, and it's like, you know, trying to reload a magazine, and you're fumbling around, like, what the fuck am I even doing?
Yeah, and
I could only imagine doing that if the target was shooting back.
That, too, and I like how, like I said, warfare at this time was, you know, people line up, take aim, fire, and then the other people, like, take aim and fire. And it's like, you can see the people shooting because you're, like, in an open field in a whole just line of people. And it's just like, whoever runs out of people first, like, wins the battle. And the British had, you know, more people, better trained, better equipment. And of the most American things, you know, like, we had to learn to fight dirty. Americans are like, you know, we're born to say fuck you and, like, do what it takes to win. Like, fuck the rules, man. Like, and this was, like, a great, you know, it kind of, yeah, I watched been watching a lot of Legends of Tomorrow, and there is, like, one episode where they went back to the Revolutionary War, and Mick, the criminal of the group, ends up getting captured with George Washington, and George Washington's, like, gonna, you know, basically let himself be executed because he's, like, been captured. Well, that's, you know, the rules of engagement. I'm not allowed to, like, break out of jail and stuff like that. And he gives this whole speech. He's like, fuck that. You know, America was built by assholes. You got to learn to, like, you know, fight dirty. It's all about winning. And so, and just, like, gives him this whole, like, go America speech. And that's, like, kind of, like, and it's like, Washington's like, you know, finally learn how to, like, you know, fight dirty and stuff. Cause Mick, like, it was funny as shit. But, you know, back to the topic is, yeah, it's like, you know, kind of, you know, Mel Gibson's Benjamin, that's kind of what he's like, no, we can't fight by the British's rules of engagement. You know, we got to fight like the Indians and, like, you know, fight, you know, like kind of like the invention of guerrilla warfare before it was even a kind of really a term. It was kind of cool. Cause like these guys that are used to very, you know, regimented battle tactics and stuff, you know, fighting these guys that, like, are just kind of ghosts and flanking you and sneaking up on you and sniping you. And, you know, just the veracity that they weren't prepared for.
I mean, it's how bad do you want that independence? You know, I mean, you know, and the, you know, the unity of, you know, 13 colonies. And I don't know. I mean, you know, this was a great film that, you know, like you said, really was insightful for the idea of America.
Yeah, and it, you know, oh, let me see what, yeah, people that are fighting for their homes are always going to fight harder than people just fighting for a king. Or, you know, the, you know, people that are defending their homes are definitely got more to lose than, you know, people fighting for, you know, the king who's, you know, an ocean away. And just like the, yeah, that whole, you know, we, you know, fire your muskets and then, you know, when, and then freaking bayonet, fix bayonets and charge. Just like the man-to-man fighting of the Revolutionary War and stuff is like, you don't see that today in the era of, you know, long-range guns and tanks and missiles and everything else. And this is like a very personal war. Like, you could see the other, the people you were fighting against because a lot of it was, you know, hand-to-hand or short-range combat. Oh, yeah,
absolutely. I mean, you know, you didn't have automobiles or anything. Everything was either done on foot or on horseback. I mean, you know, you imagine, like, rolling in the cannons and all that shit. Like, you know, nope.
Oh, yeah. Cannons. Cannons are cool.
Which is crazy to think about because you don't think, you know, you think, all right, I got this cannonball. You don't think about the impact and the fact that that thing is going to hit the ground, bounce, and continue on, like, taking out.
Oh yeah, I think
chest,
there's
like legs, everything.
Yeah, there's like a scene too, because, like, there, you know, they did have cannonballs that did have, you know, explosives in them, but most of them was just just a big iron ball coming at you with, like, all kind of force, like a giant bullet, and, like, you see it, and it doesn't even look like it's going that fast, and you see scenes where it's, like, coming, just bouncing across around, and it's, like, takes a dude's leg off, and just keeps going, and those things were, like, nasty, scary, scary things.
Like, I don't know, this era here, you know, it kind of, you know, it's, you know, almost goes back to like a medieval, you know, yeah, style of fighting, you know, of,
and battlefield medicine, like, not what it is today. I mean, you see, you know, the field hospitals were like, oh, you got shot in the arm, guess we're cutting your arm off, because, you know, if the bullet doesn't kill you, the infection will. So, yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, just this bloody nasty warfare back then.
Yeah, definitely. It just, I don't know, man. This is just one that was up there that, you know, I feel like, you know, there's no truer American story than, you know, us fighting, you know, for the independence to be America.
And the, whatever the evil, was it, Tavington, the main bad, the ones who killed his son that he kind of is after throughout the whole movie, or something like evil to him. He burns like a church full of townspeople that are helping the colonials, and is like straight
just
up
so
evil
happened,
dude.
You know, after, you know, just had the wedding, and, you know, it's like, you know, they return to the town only to be captured and everybody burned alive, and, you know, in that moment of rage is, you know, Heath Ledger made his final mistake and, you know, tried to go balls to the wall and paid the price.
I did like one of the things Mel Gibson does, because, like I said, the thing that motivates him to get back into the army is, you know, vengeance for, you know, his first son and then his second son, is he has like these little tin soldier toys that his son played with, and he melts them down and makes
the musket balls.
Musket balls out of it, and that's what he uses, like, the basically, you know, kill the officers and the soldiers stuff is those balls made out of his son's tin soldiers. And in that final, like, battle too at the Battle of Cowpens, I think it is, where kind of the war turns, and
yep,
you know, eventually they have the big Battle of Yorktown. But yeah, that one point where, like, the army starts retreating, and, like, the, you know, and this was a time too when you had guys that their whole job was they didn't even fight, they just carried the flag and, like, played the drums and stuff, you know, and the flag bearer, like, you know, gets killed, or, and, you know, Mel Gibson, like, you know,
yeah,
drops,
I mean,
it, grabs
real
the
life
flag,
game of capture the flag,
like, picks up the flag and, like, charges into, like, battle with the, and, like, everyone's seeing him just running at the British, you know, carrying the flag. It causes everyone to, like, stop retreating and, you know, and follow him in the battle. And I think he even stabs a motherfucker with the flag. That's, yes, like, the most American-ass thing. I will kill you with an American flag. I mean, that is like,
I have a point on my flagpole. It is the ultimate, and, you know, I mean, it's open, but people don't think about that being a weapon. I will spear a motherfucker.
Oh, yes, and when he finally gets that, you know, duel with him, and finally he gets, you know, Tavington, you know, down, and he's about to execute him, and he just kind of last minute dodges and freaking stabs him and finally, like, kills him. And that is, like, one of the, like, you're like, fuck yes! I mean, if that movie doesn't make you want to, like, you know, be patriotic, I mean, you have no soul.
I don't know. I like the fact too when you know, Gibson, they find two of the British dogs, and I guess, you know, he starts feeding them and trains them and everything, and he's like, okay, you know, they've captured some of our men, but I'm gonna go get them back.
Yes, because they had was it General Cornwallis? I think too. They like captured a caravan that was, like, all his personal items being brought to America, and steals all the shit. So they got all these, like, British uniforms and stuff. And after they capture some of his guys, he, like, you know, walks up to his base with the dogs and stuff, because, like, there was his, you know, hunting hounds were in the group. And he's like, returns his hounds, and he's like, by the way, I've got, like, you know, a whole bunch of your officers captured, and we're going to execute them. And he has them, like, way out in the distance. And it's like, just scarecrows pretty much dressed up in British uniforms that from what he's stolen. He's like, I'm gonna execute all your captains and, you know, colonels and stuff, you know, if you don't free my men. And he's like, you know, he's like, it is a sign of faith, I've returned your dogs. And he's like, all right, you know, free his men, you know. So then after he, like, walks out, you know, he gets, you know, kind of out of the base with all his men, and then whistles, and the dogs to come back to him. It's like, not only did I trick you with scarecrows, I stole your dogs. They like me more.
Yeah. That was just one of the moments I was like, fuck yeah. I mean, there's a lot of great, you know, rah-rah America going on in this film.
Yeah, I mean, this was like one of those movies that just, yeah, you don't realize how it's almost 20 years old. It really holds up.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think as we transition, you know, this next film, I mean, not only, you know, from a America standpoint, but just, you know, a unifying standpoint.
Yeah, and speaking of almost 20 years, this one is 20 years old and still holds up. Yeah, 1998's Armageddon, directed by Jerry Bruckheimer. Or no, directed by Michael Bay, produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. You know, but back before he started making bad Transformers movies, when Michael Bay movies were still freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Those, like, Bay-Bruckheimer films were always great. You know, when Michael Bay got out on his own is when shit got weird. But, yeah, back in the day, he made some badass movies. And Armageddon is one of those that, yeah, it still holds up. And it's also a great story of, yeah, there's several films where it's like something has happened that's gonna wipe out the world, where it's not just America coming together. It's like the world coming together to, you know, fight our own, kind of like an Independence Day, fight our own extinction. In this case, a big ass rock.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, before we get into the film, I just wanted to, you know, throw it out there that, you know, how ironic is it that you had a Gruber in Armageddon, just like you had, you know, Hans Gruber and, you know. I was like, huh.
As one yippee-ki-yay, of the motherfucker.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I was like, ah. It's a running inside joke. I get it.
Yeah, and like, yeah, this was it was kind of weird because Deep Impact also came out this year. It was like the year of giant asteroid movies, but this one is the one that like everyone remembers.
Well, I mean, this one here, I don't know. I mean, this is one that you get your action, you get your emotion. I mean, you know, and you get a lot of just great rah-rah.
A badass Aerosmith soundtrack. I mean, this is like, I think, the movie that made Aerosmith cool again. I mean, Aerosmith was always cool, but like friggin', you know, half the soundtrack
definitely
is Aerosmith songs.
Relevant, you know. I mean,
because I'd miss you, babe, and I don't want to miss a like. How many people, like, you know, made out to that song in high school dances? that was the OG.
Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the high school slow dance song in the late 90s for sure.
So, all right, so we jump into it. So, yeah, we got a big-ass rock. We got a very small limited time. So, you know, we need to devise a scheme on how the hell we handle it. And, you know, just like most of the government, oh, there's a time of crisis. We're not equipped to handle this shit, so we got to rely on some badass roughnecks.
Exactly. That too, I do like that scene before that, before they even, you know, where they're sitting there with the military and stuff, and they're all like, you know, trying to come up, you know, going through the list of like possible plans of, you know, because, you know,
it's like, we got, what was it, like, 18 days.
Yeah, like one guy's like, there's a whole like solar sail plan, which at the time you're like, oh, that's bullshit. And now solar sails, we've talked about in the science, that's actually becoming a real thing. But at the time, like, no, that's stupid. Something else. And finally, like, one guy's like,
well, it took them 18 years yeah. to develop, and that's why they couldn't do it. You know, like, guys, we got 18 days. Let's, you know, things that we can actually do in 18 days.
Yeah, and finally, the, I like it where they're sitting there. Speaking of which, the isn't the NASA scientist that comes up with this the same guy that was the bad colonel in Armageddon? I think it is the same actor. I just but he's, I mean, Army Patriot. And he's like, the military guys, well, why don't we just launch like all the nukes at it? And they're like, this is a big rock of like iron ferrite. It's like, and it's huge. It's the size of Texas. He's like, something 7 miles wide took out the dinosaurs. This is the size of Texas. He's like, you can launch every nuke you got, General, and it's just going to like piss it off and it's going to keep coming. He's like, take a firecracker and set it off in your hand. What's going to happen? It's going to burn your hand a little bit. But if you close your hand around that, someone else is going to be opening your pickle jars. he's like, we're going to need to drill inside and set off a nuke from the inside. That's the only thing that can do it.
Who better to drill?
Yeah, because at first they're like, you know, track down Bruce Willis, who's plays Harry Tamper, oil driller who's currently working in like the South China Sea or something like that. And we hear you're like the best, you know, driller, and he's like, we want you to train our astronauts to go do this. And he's like, no. He's like, you know, you want these guys to go to space, cool, but they're not going to be able to drill. Drilling is more of a art than it is a science. You know, I've been doing it for, you know, all my life, and you know, there's stuff I don't even know at this point. He's like, you know, it's going to be a whole lot easier to train drillers to be astronauts than it is to train astronauts to be drillers. He's like, so you're gonna have to send my team. And like I said, and this movie too had a lot of like people who went on to become huge stars.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, we got, you know, Owen Wilson's in it very early on. Ben Affleck. Speaking of Aerosmith, Liv Tyler. This is like, I think, her first big movie, and she's been in a whole bunch of stuff then.
Steve Buscemi.
Steve Buscemi. The big guy from Billy Bob Thornton is like the head of NASA and. What's the huge dude that was from The Green Mile? Anyway, yeah. I mean, that was another one of his, like, I think, first big movies.
Michael Duncan.
Yes, Michael Clark Duncan is Bear.
He's big as shit, bro.
William Fitner as Colonel Willie Sharp, which is a cool name too. And Keith David is the Air Force general that wants to nuke everything. And then you also have like the quintessential Russian actor who is, I don't even know if this guy is really Russian, but he plays like a Russian guy in like every movie. Peter Stormare. I mean, he's played Satan. He's played, you know, the Russian bad guy in Bad Boys 2, like the Russian mafia guy. And here he plays Lev Andropov, the Russian cosmonaut on the Russian space station that they have to stop at to refuel.
Yeah, he's actually Swedish.
Yes. He's been typecast as a Russian guy.
But he does it well.
Oh, yeah, his Russian accent is on point. This is how we fix things in the Russian space station. Fuck you, work. I want to go home. Starts beating on it until it starts working.
It's like every technical problem you've ever had. All right, back before we had LCD TVs and LED and everything else. Like, I mean, I can remember like, oh, the picture went fuzzy, so you got to hit the top of the TV a few times to clear the picture up. Like,
I do like that scene when they first introduce them to the. They introduced the new space shuttles that are like freaking titanium armored shit to take them up that's like badass. But then they have like the 8-wheeled like freaking tank things that they're mounting the drilling arms onto. And he's like, well, let's go take a look at this thing. And I think that's kind of funny when they just start tearing it apart because I've experienced this before and stuff. The people who make things are rarely the people who actually use them. Yeah, so it's like they start going through this thing and they're just like, this is plastic, this is crap. He's like, what is this, an ice cream scoop? That probably cost you a couple $100. And it starts tearing all the things. I was like, all right, this is what you're gonna have to replace in this to make it an actual functional piece of equipment. It's like when the you know, science people with the engineers and the engineers.
Well, I mean, I think it, you know, very much, you know, it takes an engineer to come up with a concept, but it takes a mechanic or somebody that's physically hands-on to, you know, be like, no, these are all the flaws.
Yeah, I think that's, we even, I think, talked about that at DragonCon when we talked to some of the NASA people. There was like, yeah, there's the people who are all about the science and want to do things for the purpose of science, and then you have the engineers that Chad have to make these ideas actually work. And, like, you know, those two things don't always agree. And, like, you know, they're, and, like, you're like, and, was it, I think it was like Dr. Sarah, was it Malkovich or something?
Yes.
And she was like, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm pretty much the one that has to explain that to the scientists, that the engineers say, this is not possible. Or vice versa, you know, to push the engineers a little bit to, like, make the thing possible. I mean, there's got to be a balance of what, like, you know, idea versus implementation. Yeah.
Expectation versus reality.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, that whole scene of them just tearing apart the thing that all the scientist guys that weren't actually going to have to use it was like, yeah, hey, look at this great thing we built. Yes, this is crap. This is what you're going to have to do to make this thing a functional piece of equipment.
You know why the other thing that, you know, makes this movie great? Let's put those box of animal crackers back on the map.
Oh, yeah. Those crappy, tasteless freaking animal crackers finally
were... And it's, you know, it's the age-old question. Do you go north or do you go south?
Oh, too. Yeah, and...
Every chick's heart throb.
And all the Star Wars references, too. I think when they're arguing over who is Han and who is Chewie. He's like, no, if anybody's Han Solo, I'm Han Solo. You're more of Chewie. He's like, have you even seen Star Wars? And then they, you know, Ben Affleck's leading one team and Bruce Willis is leading the other team. And Ben Affleck's ship crashes and pretty much everyone dies except for him, Bear, and the Russian cosmonaut that they had to rescue when they blew up his space station. And they're like, well, we're just going to drive to the other team. And they're trapped in the ship. And he's like, this is how we fix things in America. And freaking just blows a hole in the side of the ship with the machine gun and drives through it. But when they get to the, like, there's a big, like, just...
I mean, see, and that was great foreshadowing. I mean, the fact that the Americans show up to the, you know, Russian or the International Space Station and, you know, they blow the shit up, you know? I yeah. mean, look, all we're doing is refueling, and we managed to create explosions. This asteroid does not stand a chance.
Yes. But I like, too, like, they... On their way, they end up at that giant Grand Canyon on this thing, and he's like, "Oh shit, how do we get around this?" And then they finally like see something floating, and they remember that whole like no gravity thing. He's like, "Have you ever heard of Evil Knievel?" And the Russian goes like, "I did not watch Star Wars." And then like when they jump it, and then the engines freeze over and they can't, you know, reestablish the thrusters that keep them to the ground. He's like, I'm going outside. He's like, why? He's like, of the three people, I am the only one here, certified astronaut. I am going to save your asses. I just loved Lev. He was like freaking hilarious.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean, there was the humor and, you know, the fact that, you know.
And he'd just been in space too fucking long. He's like, I'm ready to go home.
The two big egos between, you know, Ben Affleck and Bruce Willis. I mean, that was just a kind of badass dynamic, yeah. You know, that it's like.
The old veteran not, and the young upstart.
Who just happens to be macking on your daughter.
Yeah. Oh, when he starts chasing him around the oil field with the shotgun.
Yeah, like, you know, I mean, I understand the intimidation. I'm just going to clean. No, he just flat out loads that shit, and he's like, it's birdshot.
I'm firing over his head. Don't worry about it. And at one point when, like, freaking Bear just steps in, he's like, if you see Harry, whack him with the wrench. And he, like, steps, and he's like, you need to leave my boy alone, boss. He's like, ch-ch-ch, out of my way, Bear. He's like, I'm just trying to give my boy a head start. I'm not going to fuck with you. You're pissed off. You got a Remington 870 here. I'm just going to step out the way.
And it doesn't get much more American than the Remington 870 either.
No. And when that ricocheted, he hits him in the leg. He's like, you shot me. He's like, it's just one pellet. It was a ricochet. Quit whining. Rub some dirt on it. Oh. But yeah, and that... Yeah, spoilers. Yeah, it's a 20-year-old movie. They get the whole drug, and the remote detonation on the bombs doesn't work. Someone's going to have to stay behind to set off the bomb. And so they draw straws, and it's Ben Affleck. So he's like, well, I'll walk him out. And as soon as he gets him out, he pulls his air hose and throws him back on the ship. And he's like, no, like, I'm going to do this. Y'all are my team. And, you know, and gives him the patch to give to because he had a conversation with Truman, who was, he's like a NASA guy who's like, you know, I went to the engineering program because I had a bad leg and couldn't be an astronaut, but I always wanted to be one of those guys with a mission patch on his arm. And he's like, you know, give this to him. And then he has, you know, calls his daughter and says goodbye. I mean, that's when it still brings like fucking tears to your, if you don't get a little misty eye during that scene.
Oh yeah. You know, where it's the whole, saying goodbye. I got to break this promise. And, you know, at that point she's kind of oblivious and she's like, oh shit, you know? And you know, the fact too that, you know, when he throws Ben Affleck back into the capsule and he's like, you know, your job now is to take care of my girl. And it's like, fuck.
Yeah. And he's like, and I always thought of you as a son. And he's like, I love you, Harry. And he's like, oh man, if you don't get a little teary eyed in that scene, you do not have a soul.
I don't have a soul.
God damn it. It's a little sad.
And that there's another thing in this movie too. I don't know why Hollywood hates France, but I've seen so many like disaster movies where France always gets blown up. They, you know, asteroid hits France in this movie. I think the G.I. Joe movie Cobra like blew up France twice. There's been a few terrorist movies that like, I guess it's because like
they have no guns. They have you know. And it is kind of always the French that are the last to show up to anything. It's like, oh, okay, the hardships. All right, well, we're here now.
I think it's just because one of those, like, you know, no matter where you're, everyone knows France. It's just that iconic, like Eiffel Tower is one of those things. No matter what country you're from, they show you the Eiffel Tower. Like, oh, I know that where that is. It's like, I think it's just one of those, like, if you showed a picture of, like, you know, I don't know, freaking Quebec getting blown up, most of you are like, where the fuck is that? But you know, you're like, oh, there's the Eiffel Tower, I know what that is. You know, it's like, it's the generic
shit, that's
theory.
Iconic.
I think even in the last Independence Day movie, the second one, you know, it got blown up. It's like, it's freaking Paris is always getting blown up in just about any non-Japanese, in Japan it's always Tokyo or Japan with the Godzilla movies, but everywhere else someone is going to blow up Paris. I don't know why.
So stay the fuck out of Paris and go to America.
America. And with that, any particular, you know, highlights, final thoughts on these three here movies here?
They're all great. And, yeah, I mean, you want, you know, some unifying patriotism. These are three films to put on your must-watch list.
Yeah, I think it's a good, you know, first three entries, you know, five if you talk about the movies that we've already talked to offer your American watch list. You know, maybe next year we'll add a couple more to the list. And so any final thoughts on this here cigar, which not really a final thought, I'm only about halfway through it.
Yeah, for once I'm ahead of you on the game. So powerhouse to some people, not so much of a powerhouse to me. Especially after, you know, I've had about a 2.5 week break of being able to sit down and have a cigar. You know, absolutely full flavor, no doubt about that. But it just wasn't, you know, you were making the comment about, you know, having to run over and hurl. And no, not at all. I will say that the construction, the flavor profile and everything, though, makes this a great cigar.
Yeah, I haven't really had to touch up my burn till kind of right here toward the middle. And even that, I think it's just because I got on a long diatribe and it just went out on me because I wasn't consistently puffing on it. It's held up good. And, you know, I've had stronger cigars. This is definitely not what I would call like a full power.
I just said that.
But it's definitely, you know on one thing on the plus side, but not like full power.
The blast of the peppery oakiness. Those are probably two distinguishing flavors that I pick up on the most. And you know, even being 2/3 of the way finished with this cigar, that has not let off. So this is one cigar that, you know, has kind of had its foot on the gas from the start, and it hasn't, you know, diminished at all. But construction, price point, everything else, you know, this is a damn phenomenal cigar. So if you're looking for something with, you know, definitely a full strength, I would absolutely recommend this.
Yeah, this is definitely a good cigar. Yeah, maybe just got me a little burnt because I've smoked. It's been a heavy smoking weekend. I think this is my like sixth cigar in the last 2 days, so my taste buds are a little burned out at this point. But yeah, it's definitely not redlined for me, but it's definitely had its foot to the pedal the whole time. It's a good cigar, if not like super super strong. And with that, we'll be right back. I could stay awake just to hear you breathing, watch you smile while you are sleeping, while you're far away dreaming. I could spend my life in this sweet surrender. I could stay lost in this moment forever. Every moment spent with you is a moment I treasure.
Now it's time for Blowin' Smoke.
And it's time for some Blowin' Smoke. So this week's random-ass topic, we're going to talk a little bit about acting.
I know acting has been one of your, you know, big passions. Like, you know, not only that, but also, you know, kind of doing some stand-up comedy and stuff like that. So
yeah, one of these days I'm actually going to have to sit down and work on writing something to
you're all about wanting to get up on some stage. And
yeah, so this last weekend, another reason was we kind of backed up on some stuff. I was being a stuntman slash extra in a small independent film they're working on. So, you know, without, you know, going into, you know, because of course, you know, you always sign, you know, non-disclosure agreements when you're working on something, and once that comes out, I can talk a little bit more about what it is, and I will definitely post the links to that when it comes out. Yeah, but at this point, this is the second time I've gotten like a small extra part in something, and like the first one was an actual Hollywood movie that came out, and then this one, like I said, is a kind of a small independent thing that'll be on YouTube eventually. So production-wise, definitely two different animals, but, you know, a lot of people, like, they, especially, there's several Facebook groups you can follow. Extra Castings Atlanta is one of them. I think there's, like, A-List is another one. There's another one I'm skipping now that are constantly, you know, putting out these ads for needing extras for stuff. And, you know, also there's, you know, Craigslist, whatever, there's plenty of ways to find your way into, and a lot of people that are kind of wannabe actors like myself think this is a cool way to get yourself into films, and it is. But if you think you're going to be discovered and be the next big thing in Hollywood being an extra, probably not going to happen. It's a fun way to, and
well, I mean, I think it's got to be a fun way to get a portfolio. Yeah. And like you said, increase, you know, I mean, some social media presence, and you know,
it's something you can add to a resume one day when you actually want to start trying to get
networking with people that are in a particular industry.
Yeah, and the cool thing about this one was, you know, it's not just because, I mean, there's different types of extra work, and a lot of time, like the first time, I was just kind of a background guy. You know, I think I talked about Road Trip Beer Pong. I was one of the bikers that chased some guys out of a bar, and this one, I got to do a little bit more stunt work, and it's not done filming. I got to go back and film some more stunt sequences. So that was definitely
a fire suit or anything exciting.
No, I did get hit in the face a bunch and got to, like, you know, do some falls on some mats and shit so far. And, you know, like I said, just did a few like small segments, and we'll supposedly get to be a bigger action sequence coming up. But one of the things you think of when you're like, I want to be an extra because I'm going to get to watch how they make a movie. Not really. So if you're doing this because, you know, if you're doing it because you just want to be in a film on a set, you know, definitely this is a great way to get that experience without.
Just get some food or something out of the gig.
Well, that's one thing too. You're going to get fit. I mean, that's pretty. So they are going to, you know, in, depending on what level of film you're working on, like shit. When I was on that road trip movie, I mean, they had like a whole freaking trailer full of food and like, you know, big meals. And if you're doing something independent, you may have, you know, pizzas and sandwiches, but you know, you're going to get fed. But if you're thinking you're going to be able to sit there and just watch how they make a movie, no, you're probably not, because most of the time they don't want you there, you know, having to worry about somebody getting caught on film or making noise and ruining a take. So you're probably going to be sequestered in like a holding area. You will get to watch when you're actually in a scene, but when you're not being used, you're not just going to be able to dick around in the background and sit there and watch the production.
Well, I mean, I feel like, you know, in my head, just from a, of course, an audio standpoint, is oftentimes you get the relevant snippets, but that doesn't come into a full track or a full podcast or anything until much later on when producers and editors and everything else sit down and start putting together all of these pieces of the puzzle to create a film.
Oh yeah, and but like I said, you know, the parts when you're actually on camera are definitely cool to an educational, seeing how they actually shoot those scenes. So, but yeah, if you think you're gonna, when you're not actually working, you're going to be able to sit there and watch. No, it's not going to happen. You're going to be in a trailer, a tent, or in my case, this last weekend, in a hot basement in an undisclosed location, waiting for them to call you for your scene. So, you know, definitely bring something to keep you occupied, because even though what you're filming may only end up being 3 minutes in the overall film, it takes hours and hours and hours to make days, months to make a movie. So there's definitely a lot of downtime. So like I said, I brought a book with me. So bring a book, you know, bring snacks. What are you, some way to keep yourself entertained, and you know, also something to keep yourself entertained quietly. Because you know, where I was, like the other movie I was in, like there was like a kind of an off-site staging area, where this one we were close enough to the action where we couldn't really make any noise because they would hear it in the next area where they're filming. So pretty much had to just sit quietly and entertain yourself. So like I said, I got a lot of reading done this weekend. So yeah, as far as, you know, the educational standpoint, when you're actually working, you're going to get to see some cool stuff. And it's also cool seeing how, like what ends up being maybe a 30-second, couple minute sequence. They have to shoot that like over and over and over again, because you're not, even if you get it right on the perfect on the first take, they're going to have to move the cameras and reset and do it again for a different angle. If you're lucky, they got multiple cameras so they can kind of cover multiple angles at one time, so you don't have to do it so many times over. But yeah, it's going to be one of those that's like, it's going to repeat again and again, because they, you know, what you see in a movie where it's like, oh, it's like there's like 15 different camera angles. Yeah, that whole sequence is probably shot 15, 16 times to get those different camera angles, because you said it, there's a lot of repetitive,
you know, 2 or 3 second flashes.
Yeah. So that's definitely something that, you know, you learn being on set, is how many times you have to, like I said, even if each take is perfect and nobody screws up and they don't have to do it again, it's still going to have to be shot several times to get it, you know, completely right. And another thing too, that I noticed, it was kind of funny, because we've kind of done this from the audio because like it's like we don't really do video, but we, you know, so like I kept paying attention to the guy doing the audio recordings, because I'm like, that's primarily what we deal with. So I was like kind of more interested in what he was doing, and like they also record the environment and the environmental sounds with nothing going on, so they can. So, like, we've done where we've had, like, say, an air conditioner or something in the background. You know, we'll take a blank recording of that so we know what to edit out in the other, you know, take. So, if that sound pops up during during the, you know, regular recording, we know what to look for, and or you know what to look for and cut out, because you're the one that does all the audio engineering. But, yeah, that whole just, like, you know, everyone shut up, we're going to record the environment. It was just like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's not something I, you know, actively thought about happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those that You know, I mean, there's so much that goes into it that, like you said, you know, most people probably don't really think about, you know, or, you know, that, or you're in the middle of shooting and somebody drives by on a loud-ass motorcycle and it's like, well, you can't just get rid of that, so, you know, take it from the top.
Yeah, and it was kind of hilarious, too, because there was one point where we had just finished filming a scene and they were like, all right, everybody be quiet, we're going to do the, I can't remember what they called it now, but it was, you know, the background recording. And right as they told everyone to be quiet, we're going to just do a blank take of the environment. A train goes by. So everyone's like completely quiet. Then you're just, meh, you're like, okay, never mind. Let's wait a couple of minutes. Because the environment can always fuck you. Because, like, and then, like, the first day we were there, they're like, all right, cool. Y'all are going to be busy today. We're going to do a whole bunch of stunt stuff. We're all going to be filming outside. You know, we're going to do a couple interior stuff after lunch. Y'all are going to be busy. Cool. As soon as lunch hits, rain. And rain the rest of the day. So pretty much like the first day there, I didn't do jack shit because like everything that was planned to be filmed, the environment just fucked us and it got moved to like the next day and still didn't get all of it. So like I said, that's another reason why I'm probably going to have to go back in a couple weeks to film more because, you know, you're kind of, you know, whatever the plan is definitely not always what is actually going to happen.
Especially when the outdoors and Mother Nature is involved.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, definitely doing things. Like I said, I've done a lot of martial arts. I just fought in a big tournament Saturday. You know, so it's, you know, my previous background work was, you know, not a whole lot of, you know, I ran down the street like two or three times from a couple different angles to chase these guys, but actually getting to do stunt work, that's another thing. Even if I wasn't got to be an on-camera actor, like, stunt work is another thing that's always kind of fascinated me, like the fall guy and, like, the unknown stuntman. So actually getting to, like, do some fight sequences and stuff in this is kind of a cool experience for me.
That was always one of the things that, you know, I always thought would be cool, you know, to kind of be like the stunt double or, you know, something of that effect. Like, you know, you're wrecking the cars or you're spinning out the cars or, you know, you're driving as, you know, the explosions go off behind you and stuff. And it's like, a lot of that now is probably more digital than practical, but.
I did do like the you know, stunt choreographer and stuff too is like, you know, hell, I can throw kicks and do like martial arts and stuff, but I'm like generally a big dude. He's like, oh no, man, you're big as shit, man. I'm gonna have you picking up throwing motherfuckers around and just being a brute. I'm like, I can do that too. So yeah, that part of it was fun. But yeah, you know, like I said, it's a lot more downtime than you're probably expecting if you've never done it before. But if you want to get, you know, it's probably nothing that's going to turn into a full-time acting gig. You know, if you want to be an actor, you know, start in theater, you know, go, you know, or actually audition for actual roles in films if acting is your ultimate goal. But if you're just wanting to see what happens on a set and, you know, get some set experience, you know, extra is a good way to get your foot in the door in that regards and get some experience. Or, you know, like I said, these guys that are making these films are not big Hollywood guys, but it was run like a, you know, professional, you know, there was multi-cameras, there was a sound guy, there was PAs. I mean, it was a legitimate professional set, even though this is a, you know, low budget, you know, fan film pretty much. So it's, you know, there's nothing, that's the one thing kind of I learned from this experience is there's nothing from stopping you from making your own thing. I mean, that's kind of like why we got into podcasting, but so if you want to be an actor and you can't, you know, get your foot in the door through, you know, standard channels of auditioning for a thing, make your own thing. I mean, there's nothing stopping you other than time. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be a huge amount of money, especially if you're shooting something on your own. You know, as long as you got a camera and some dudes willing to help you out and, you know, can write a decent script or have, you know, like I said, I'm not skilled in everything, but I know people. Like, I wanted to start a podcast. I knew shit about audio engineering. I knew a guy. So, like I said, you know, you don't have to do things on your own. You know, you can find, you know, friends that have different skill sets if you want to make a thing. I mean, you know, I think, you know, making your own thing's a good way to get some stuff out there and show people. Like I said, you know, you on a resume is not as impressive as putting a tape of you doing something in front of somebody. I think, you know, even if it's a YouTube show, that's going to get your foot in the door to actual, like, you know, paid acting experience if there's something someone can see you in. So if you can't get someone else to put you in a thing, make your own thing. Now, if I can just figure out a way to get podcasts to get, you know, make money, we'd be set. But yeah, that's the one thing I learned about what, you know, 'cause like I said, I've seen it from the professional Hollywood side. I've now seen it from the independent film side, and it definitely inspired me. If like I can get a hold of a camera and some people that, you know what they're doing, like, make a thing. I mean, we did that, YouTube short with the Corey's YouTube thing. And like I said, it doesn't take a whole lot. That was like, you know, two dudes making that whole show. So it's not impossible in this day and age of hell. Like, even if you don't have a nice, you know, digital camera, your phone shoots 1080p. I mean, as long as you got some decent audio, you don't need a expensive, camera. You've got a pretty decent camera right in your hand. I mean, hell, they even make like freaking Steadicam rigs to put your phone in, or your I've seen people filming events off of freaking iPads. So it's like, you know, the equipment's gotten cheaper. The production, you know, side of it's a lot cheaper because you can pretty much put anything on YouTube for free. Yeah, it's just making it worth watching. So yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. You want to do a thing? Go make a thing. That's all I got to say.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as $1 a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always. But you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to esopodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. So up next is, always kind of talked about, zombie, Bill Murray, from Zombieland and stuff. Well, apparently Bill Murray and Selena Gomez are going to star in Jim Murich's zombie movie. This is going to be called The Dead Don't Die. So I thought it was kind of cool to, kind of see,
title.
Bill Murray and, come back as a zombie after, that little bit of a gag that we saw from Zombieland. So, this is described as a zombie comedy. It's also going to have Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, Steve Buscemi, who we talked about earlier. So, basically it's going to be police officers dealing with a zombie crisis.
So it's like Bright, but with zombies.
Maybe. I don't know. This is currently filming in upstate New York, so... zombies have kind of fallen off the map, I mean, The Walking Dead doesn't quite have
the
stronghold. There's been, obviously we know that, Rick is leaving, I guess. The girl that played Maggie, she was fighting for equal pay, and that didn't happen, so... she's soon to be leaving as well, from what I've read. I haven't followed the series as closely, but I don't know. It's going to be basically the Daryl and Carol show, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it might be about time to start wrapping this thing up.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, another, breath of life for folks, looking for... another zombie flick. I don't know. Probably one of my favorites, which Zombieland is up there. I know they're working on Zombieland 2. We'll touch on that here in just a minute. But Fido, I think would, very much fit that, zombie comedy
Somebody comedy.
Yeah, you know. Inventing words here. It's what we do. You know, I'm on a roll. So, you know, now that Cap's out of the bag, Zombieland 2, all of the original stars will be returning.
Have we heard if that one's going to be filming in Atlanta as well? Because I definitely would like to go be an extra in that.
I don't know if
the
that
food's
is...
better on like Hollywood Productions.
Yeah, I don't know if that one is being filmed in Atlanta or where it is.
Because I know the first one, there was a lot of Netherworld people got extra spots in that. It was like someone like spot the zombies. Hey, I know that one.
So, yeah, Emma Stone, Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, Abigail Breslin, you know. Yeah, this is set to release in October 2019, so I would imagine probably most of the filming at this point is already wrapped up. I mean,
damn. Yeah, I mean, in the apocalypse, I want to be Woody Harrelson. His character in the first movie is like, yeah, that's who I would be. I would be the redneck with all the guns. looking for my last Twinkie. Because at that point, I'm really not caring about a low-carb diet. You know, it's the apocalypse. I'm going to get fat again.
Yeah, so this is, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the first, I mean, I would definitely say is a success. I mean, filmed on a $24 million budget, you know, this one, you know, it earned.
I wonder if he'll still be looking for Twinkies or if he's moved on to a different dessert in this new movie. I mean, it's a sequel. You always got to, you know, up the the standards.
I wonder what it could be. I mean, Twinkie is very iconic. Yeah.
Want some Swiss rolls or something? I don't know.
Funnel cake.
I want some pecan pie. Those little, like, gas station round pecan pies.
Yeah. Or a honey bun.
Oh, fuck yeah, a honey bun. For a guy that doesn't eat sweets anymore, a honey boon. That's
a honey boon. Like, what has a cigar done to us, man?
I don't know. Oh, I'm smoked out.
Yeah. So, you know, in further news, you know, The Rock was in another, you know, big disaster film called Skyscraper. holy shit, it didn't take number one at the box office. I think that is probably a first.
I didn't realize this had even come out yet. Well, that shows how much I've been paying attention. Because I've seen the trailers and everybody making fun of, like, there's no way he can make that giant leap. I didn't even realize this had even come out yet.
Yeah, I think it, you know, this was, it's either this weekend or no, last weekend was opening. But, yeah, I mean, you know, took in about $25 million, which probably doesn't even cover The Rock's budget.
Yeah, because, I mean, I didn't even start seeing trailers for that until recently. I've seen a few posters for it. What trailer I did see of it, it kind of looked like Die Hard. It's like The Rock trying to do a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and just not as successfully.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. Kind of crazy that the sequel king was Hotel Transylvania 3 Summer Vacation.
Wow.
At $44.1 million. So I was just kind of surprised because usually, you know, just having The Rock's name associated with something, you know, most folks are, yeah, it's going to be a good film, and you know, he just draws in people. But
and right around the holiday weekend, it's kind of people are out of town and stuff, so it's kind of a bad time for me. That new Ant-Man and the Wasp just came out, and that's probably still making lots of money, so releasing something right around the time of a Marvel movie is never a good idea.
Well, something that is a good idea is John Wick 3 actually has a title now.
Fuck yeah.
So, the official title is John Wick Parabellum.
Ooh.
So, you know. Yeah. Basically, it translates from the Latin phrase, servae pacem, parabellum, which translated, if you want peace, prepare for war. Which is very fitting in the world of John Wick.
Yes. Then I saw there's a... I went to the Blade show. There was a guy making replacement backplates for Glock slides, and he called Classy Raptor Tactical. And I like their logo because it's a Raptor with a monocle and a top hat, very steampunk. But they have a John Wick backplate. This is that iconic picture from the posters where everybody's pointing guns at his head. You can get that for a Glock Black backplate.
Oh, that is pretty awesome.
They also make one that has the Mandalorian Mythosaur skull, I think, in a copper. I think I'm going to order that one for my 19X.
So, yeah, I mean, after the breaking of the rules and everything else, Reeves did come out and say that, you know, Halle Berry's character has some information for him, and they had past dealings with the High Table. So, kind of curious how it all comes together. So, I guess we will find out on May 17th, 2019, when this film releases.
And then late May, we'll have the John Wick 3 episode of the podcast.
Yes. Woohoo! Already planning for the future. Up next is Black Widow, I believe, has finally found its director. I know there's been a lot of candidates out there, but Kate Shortland is taking over directorial duties.
Nice. I mean, we've, you know, as we kind of move into the next phase of Marvel stuff post whatever the second part of Infinity War is. Yeah, it's like the one character that they've not really given a solo film to. That's, you know, pretty much her and Hawkeye are the only, like, main Avengers that haven't gotten a solo film yet, so.
And it's kind of crazy. I mean, Black Widow is so iconic. There's a lot of content and stuff to work there with,
Don't even know, I haven't heard anything of where this is going to be set, but, I mean, they could even do, like a prequel with, you know, and some of her backstory, because, I mean, she's got a pretty rich backstory and stuff from the S.H.I.E.L.D. days, or even, you know, pre-S.H.I.E.L.D. when she was a Russian assassin. Would be kind of cool to see. All I request is that she goes back to being a redhead. I did not like the blonde Black Widow in Infinity War. That just as a fan of redheads, that has kind of disappointed me. I mean, I can understand it. They're on the lam. They're technically wanted people, so they got to kind of change up their looks a little bit. But come on. Could they not have made it a wig or something? I want my redheaded Black Widow.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know, such an iconic, you know, for that character to, you know, not be redheaded. Yeah. Like,
Hashtag bring back the gingers.
The Ginger Avenger. and we got our first teaser for Doctor Who Series 11.
Speaking of blondes, the doctor is still not a ginger.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of curious. I mean, you don't get a whole lot from the teaser outside of, you know, just kind of the universe is calling, and you see the flash of the doctor appear toward the end, and, you know, the doctor taking on a female lead this time.
Have to catch up. I kind of missed the last season of Doctor Who, so I didn't get to see Peter Capaldi's exit, who's going to be a guest at Dragon Con this year, so it'll be cool getting to see him. So it's, you know, a huge change for the story, but yeah, I may have to catch up on this last season and give this new doctor a try, see how the story goes.
Absolutely. And speaking of Dragon Con and that Cigar Nerd news that I hinted at the beginning of the episode. So, in a Cigar Nerd first.
Yes, so for a little behind the scenes, there's technically two levels of media access you get when you get approved for media access at Dragon Con. So the last few years, however many years we've been doing it, we've kind of been on the first tier of Dragon Con access, where we get the media badges, we're allowed to record there, but we don't have access to TV and movie stars. We can only interview non-media guests. That's why we've had scientists, writers, robot builders, game designers, because we've not been, we did get, Steve Bloom last year, because I always try to sneak one past the request and, like, let me just kind of put somebody in there that we might shouldn't talk to, but and see if we can get them on the podcast. But this year, for the first time, we've been approved for full media access, so we can send requests to, you know, TV and movie guests. So we have submitted our list, and we'll see who says yes. I mean, they may still tell us all to fuck off, but for the first time, we've actually been able to make those requests of bigger name celebrities. So let's cross your fingers and hope we get some yeses.
Absolutely. So, you know, that is the foray that is the Cigar Nerds. I mean, you know, things are transpiring.
Yeah, coming up on episode 100, you know, 5 more episodes, and this is 95. So, like I said, we've been doing it for a while now, and it's, I guess, you know, since, yeah, you made the point the other day that, you know, the media people have always commented that, oh, y'all show up for every interview we give you, and y'all look to be prepared and have your equipment and have your notes and everything else that we don't see from a lot of some other people. So I mean, I guess we've made a good impression on
our previous assignments. You know, maybe for the next Blowing Smoke, you know, we can talk about our experiences into podcasting. And you know, I think that's where a lot of people kind of miss the mark a little bit is, yes, anybody can Skype, anybody can grab a microphone and talk, but, you know, how do you become, you know, a podcaster that, you know, builds? And I mean, obviously they're a much bigger podcast than us, but, you know, as two guys that started at a cigar shop sitting in a basement,
yeah,
this is a pretty big jump.
Yeah, and you know, we may not have several million listeners yet, but then we're not celebrities. A lot of these huge podcasts are started by people who are actors, comedians, you know, do something in other media and then move into the podcast realm, where we're a couple idiots who just, like you said, started in a cigar shop and have built things from there. So yeah, that might be a little podcasting 101. Be a nice discussion for a future episode.
Any other news or tidbits? You hinted to something earlier off air.
Oh yeah, I believe we talked about that. Top Gun is getting a confirmed sequel. Well, they had a little bit of a casting news. What's his name now?
Tom Cruise?
No, not Tom Cruise. The new guy. We've gotten a little bit more about the Miles Teller. Yeah, Miles Teller has been cast to play Goose's son. And apparently we've also gotten a little bit of the story. Apparently Tom Cruise is going to kind of be the because, you know, as you saw at the end of Top Gun, he returned to Top Gun as an instructor. And we've got a title. It's going to be called Top Gun Maverick, where in this one, he's the kind of the lead instructor teaching the next generation of pilots, and he's going to be training Goose's son to be a fighter pilot. So it's kind of cool, you know, tying that into the original story. And, you know, Miles Teller has been in a few movies now, and he's, you know, a good actor, and he's been in some good things. So it's kind of interesting to see him playing the next generation of Goose.
No doubt. So,
talk to me, Goose.
What's your closing quote?
And with that, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're also on the ESO Network at ESOPodcast.com.
Don't forget that ESO Patreon account, too.
Yep. And then, if you need some energy drinks, StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code CigarNerds. If you need some smoking shirts for Dragon Con, RealMenSmokeCigars.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at CigarNerdPod, and I want to try to start doing some more, like, Instagram stories, maybe even some live stuff, so we might record some video stuff while we're at Dragon Con. So definitely, if you're not following us on Instagram, go follow us on Instagram, because I'm going to try to post a lot of shit while we're there. And with that, just want to feel the power between my legs. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.